Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'a Daf Chof Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 16 lines from the top. The Gemara opens with a quote from the Mishnah, V'ein Zoikvin es Hamanuro. We saw that Rabbi Gamliel practiced a stringency in accordance with Beis Shammai and would not stand up, would not reposition a candelabra on Yom Tov. One should bear in mind that in general, Yom Tov, even though it resembles Shabbos with its many melacha restrictions, there are leniencies with regard to the use of fire, especially in the realm of cooking. So when we see a candelabra, which we associate with fire, and we see a restriction, so that arouses our curiosity. So the Gemara asks, my COVID, what is the problem involved in standing up a candelabra? Omar Rav Chinana Bar Bisna. So Rav Chinana explains, here we're not dealing with the issue of fire. However, we're dealing with something else. Hocha b'menorah shel chulias ashinan. Here we're dealing with a menorah that's made of chulios. Chulios are pieces, couplets, that when fastened one with the other, they form a candelabra. And in the Mishnah, we're speaking about a menorah that fell and became detached. In other words, all the pieces fell apart from one another. And the reassembling of it, as the Gemara says, the mechsi kibona, the restriction here, is because it appears that you are involved in construction, building houses. Building structures is something forbidden on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Beis Shammai extends this restriction to vessels as well. The Beis Shammai Savri, Beis Shammai is of the opinion Yesh Binyan Bekelim V'Yesh Stira Bekelim. The concept or the malacha of construction and destruction applies to vessels as well, meaning as well as structures that are attached to the ground. Ubeis Hillel Savri Ein Binyan Bekelim Ubein Stira Bekelim. Beis Hillel, who is lenient in this respect, holds that the prohibition of Binyan is restricted to actual structures and not to vessels. Ula Ikla Lebei Rav Yehuda. Ula visited, went to the house of Rav Yehuda, Kom Shamei Zokaf Le Lishroga. The Shamei is the servant that accompanied Ula. He got up and he set up a Zokaf, means he set up, he stood up or straightened out a menorah. Now, here Rashi adds the essential information that what he was doing was he was causing the oil supply that was fueling the wick to flow away from the wick. And this you can see in Rashi on the fourth narrow line, Zokaf l'shroga shoyroitza shiistali kashem l'achorov. He wanted the oil to flow away from the wick, and it shouldn't be drawn after the wick, and as a result, the fire of this lit candelabra will go out. Esve Rav Yehuda Lula. Rav Yehuda raised an objection to Ula. The source says, Hanoisin Shemen Bener, one who adds oil to a lit candle, lit wick on Shabbos, chayav mishum avir. He's in violation of burning. Of mavir is to cause something to burn. So you're adding fuel to the lit wick, and that is a Shabbos violation. Vamistapek mimenu, one who draws oil from a burning candle, even on Yom Tov, is chayov mishum mechabe. That restriction is applicable to Yom Tov as well. So, what do you see? That drawing oil away from a burning wick is forbidden on the grounds of it being mechabe extinguishing, which is one of the avos melachos, one of the prohibited primary activities of Shabbos. So, how can your servant tilt the candelabra in such a way that the oil flows away from the wick, causing its extinguishing? Omarle, Ula responds, Lav adatoi. That which my servant did was not with my knowledge, it wasn't with my approval. So, what he did was wrong. I agree it's wrong, but I had no part of it. Omar Rav, Kinva Shori. As far as what this is, what is kinva, so we're going to, in our explanation, we're going to use the pshat, the hesber, that you find in the Tosfos. And this Tosfos explains that wicks, after they have been lit, charcoal accumulates at the top of the wick. And what is being described here is the removal of that charcoal so that it's easier to light it. And that's what Rav is allowing. We have a marking. You see diamonds that appear, one of our series markings. And on the side of Luma, we have our structural note and topic heading. And the diamonds represent three she'elois be'inyin lahatir mishum hanoas haguf. Three questions where we're asking about allowing something, the goal being to create physical body pleasure. And the double underline that you will see in the Gemara introduces three hatkafot me oisoi mokar. The three questions that are raised will be challenged each time by the same source. In other words, the same source will appear three times, even though there are different questions that are raised, but the same source is being used to challenge each one of those questions. So the Gemara now, Bo mine Abo bar Marto me Abaye. Abo bar Marto asks of Abaye, Mahu l'chabois es aner mipnei dover achir. Can one extinguish a candle in order to create an environment where intimacy between man and his wife will be now allowed? Of course, from this you understand very well that intimacy is not to be conducted in a lit room. So, in order to enable them to engage in intimacy, the candle that happens to be in their room needs to be extinguished. Well, is one allowed to do that on Yom Tov? Of course, extinguishing for some other general purpose would not be allowed. We saw that in the previous discussion. But here the question focuses on intimacy. Omar Lo, so Abaye answers, why do you have to bother extinguishing the candle? Efshir b'bayis achir, you can go to another room where there's no candle. Question, ein lo bayis achir mai? And if there is no other room, so what's the din with regard to putting out the candle? So he says, efshir lasus lo mechitza. He can put something to block where him and the light. Question, ein lo lasus mechitza mai? Let's say he doesn't have something to block, to set up between him and the light. Answer, Efshir lichbois olav esakli. he can invert a large vessel, which won't cause the candle to go out, but will create darkness. Well, ein lo kli mai, so what if he doesn't have a vessel? Amar lei, aser. So Abaye rules, it's forbidden to put out the candle. Esve, a question is raised. The source says, ein mechabin es abakas kidei lochus olehel. A person who has a piece of wood that's burning, bakas, a log that's burning, and it's Yom Tov, he's not allowed to put it out because he wants to save the log. Lochus is to literally have compassion on it, but it means to preserve it for later on. V'im b'shvil shel yis'ashin abayis o hakadeiro mutar. If his purpose in putting out this burning log is so that the house doesn't become full of smoke, or to keep a pot from burning, so then it's mutar. The Rashi says, up in the upper third of the page, mutar, alma l'tzorach yom tov shi'ahana hayom shori. What do we see from here? That if it's for the benefit of yom tov, where you'll be able to enjoy yom tov more, certainly a house that's smoke-free and a pot that's not burnt will enable you to enjoy yom tov more. So that, you know, under circumstances like that, so putting out the law, the fire is allowed. By the same token, putting out the candle in order for you to enjoy intimacy, which will enable you to enjoy Yom Tov more, it should be allowed. Omar Le, Abaye, who had ruled Usur just a few lines up, he says, Hahi, the source you just quoted to show leniency is Rabbi Yehuda, he, that is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Ki kwamino ano the Rabbanon. My ruling of restriction was in accordance with the Rabbanon, who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, later in the Masechta, darshans the pasuk where it says Ye'ose lochem to mean lechol tzorcheichem, for all of your Yom Tov needs, so that it extends beyond food proper. The Rabbanon don't expand the posuk Ye'ose lechem to include all Yom Tov related pleasures. Ba'amine, question number two, lasts a couple of lines, you can see. Ba'amine Abaye Mirabo. Mahu lechabos hasadleika b'yom tov. What is the din regarding putting out a fire, a conflagration on Yom Tov? Heichot iko sakonas nefoshes, where the conflagration is life-threatening. Lo ka mibayali. There, I have no question. Afilu b'shabbos shor, even on Shabbos, which is a more restrictive day, where there's no general permission for fire activity, but if it's to preserve life, it's mutter, even on Shabbos, to put out the fire. Ki kamevayali mishum ibud mamon mai. My question is concerning saving financial loss. Can you put out a fire where there's nothing life-threatening, but if you don't, there'll be financial loss? What's the din? Amalei oser? So Rabba answered, it's forbidden. Esve, ein mechabin es abakas kidei lochus oleho. One is not allowed to put out a log in order to preserve it. V'im b'shvil shelo yis'ashen habayis oy hakadeiro mutter. If your purpose is so to keep the house from being smoke-filled or preserve a pot of food, so then it's allowed. And Rashi adds, in Dibur HaMasvel Esve, where you see a star, he says, V'ein locho ishun bayis godol min hadleka. You don't have any greater case of, say, of keeping the house from smoking than a house that's on fire. V'tzorach yom tovu l'chabosa. And it then serves as an extinguishing that benefits Yom Tov. Shalit tzorach leishev b'shrav u'gshamizli. Doesn't have to sit outside in the heat or in the rain, so that why then, if a house is on fire, why is it usher to put out the fire on Yom Tov? Don't you see from this source a heter? So Rabbo answers, Hahi Rabbi Yehuda hi. That source which is lenient is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. Ki ko'amino ano l'rabbonon. My response to you of Osir was based on the opinion of the Rabbonon. Bo mine Rav Ashi me'amemar. Ma'u likhol eso'ayin b'yom tov. Likhol is the process of adding some type of medicinal ointment or substance to one's eye, and it has therapeutic value. So can one do this on Yom Tov? Hecho de'ikos sakona, where the need is to prevent something that's endangering. Kagon, and here's a list of diseases, eye-related ailments that could lead to something life-threatening. The names are Rira, Ditsa, Doma, Dimasa, Vekadchisa, Tchilas, Uchla, Lo, Miboyali. If it's at the beginning of any of these ailments, so then there is no question. Afilu b'Shabbos, or even on Shabbos, which is a more restrictive day, it would be mutter l'kol esa'ayin. Ki kol mibayali, soif uchla, uptsuche eino mai. My question concerns where the disease is finishing. And the point in doing l'kol esa'ayin right now is just to improve the eyesight. But there's nothing life-threatening at this point anymore. Amale aser. So Amemar answers, forbidden. Esve. Ein mechaben esabakas, etc. The same source is raised where you see that where Yom Tov benefit will be derived, where you'll physically enjoy Yom Tov more. So we allow things. We allow the putting out of the burning log. By the same token, we should allow adding this an ointment for improving your eyesight. Shoni le kidishonin, and Amemar answered, as we answered before, that the source represents Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, which is lenient, which expands the Ye'oseh Lochem of the Pasuk to include all kinds of physical hanos that you will benefit from on Yom Tov. And Amemar's response had been based on the Shita of the Rabbonon that were more restrictive. The triangle that you see is explained on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading, Shnei Kulos Shel Amemar B'inyan Kochol Ayin. Because even though Amemar was restrictive till now, he had answered Rav Ashi as saying that it's also L'Kolos Ayin. Here you see Amemar being lenient in that realm. Amemar shori lemikhal eino minochri b'shabata. If a non-Jew is going to add this substance to your eye, so that's okay. In other words, what Amemar was restricting before was your own applying the ointment to your eye. But if a nochri does it for you, that's okay. Iko the Amri, another version, is Amemar gufei kochal eino minochri b'shabato. Not that Amemar simply allowed it, but Amemar had it done to himself by a Gentile. A Gentile did it for him. In other words, put in Amemar's eye the kochal. Omar le Rav Ashi l'Amemar. Rav Ashi asks, Amemar, my daitoch, based on what are you saying this? The Omar Ulo Braid Ravi Loi called Sorchi Khil Oisanide Nochri Bishabis, that Ula, in the name of the son of Ravi Loi, says all sick people. people's needs can be done by a Gentile on Shabbos. And Rav Hamnuna says that anything that is not, even if it's not life-threatening, something that is not life-threatening, you're allowed to ask a Gentile to do it. So, but Rav Ashi continues with his question. That is allowed. There is this leniency when you are not, you the Jew, are not assisting the Nochri in what he's doing. Avomor ko Messiah Bahadei, but you, Amemar, are assisting the Gentile to ko omitz uposach. You're closing your eye and opening your eye, enabling him to put the kochel in. Omar lay, so Amemar answers, Iko Rav Zvid de koi kavosech. There is Rav Zvid that used to ask me, just like you're asking on me, Vishani lay, and I answered him, Mesayea ein bo mamish. The fact that I'm merely assisting him, that is of no substance, and therefore it's not considered as if I'm doing anything. Amemar shoro lemikhal eino b'yom tov sheni shel Rosh Hashanah. Now it's true, Amemar before said that you can't do likhol ayin even on Yom Tov. However, on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, you are allowed to do it. Amar le Rav Ashi l'Amemar. So once again, you see Rav Ashi challenging Amemar. V'ho'amar Rava, is it not so that Rava has said, Meis b'yom tov rishon yisasku bo amim? If someone dies on the first day of a holiday, so then Gentiles are allowed to bury the body. This means deal with it, means to bury it. B'yom tov sheni yisasku b'Yisrael, v'afilu b'shnei yom tovim shirosh Hashanah. When it comes to the second day of Yom Tov, even if it's the second day of Rosh Hashanah, Jews are allowed to bury the deceased. And the Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis, Mashen came to Beitzah. This leniency is limited to the dead. It doesn't extend, for example, to the halacha concerning an egg that's laid. An egg that's laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is usher on the second day as well. In other words, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are considered one continuum of sanctity, one unit of sanctity, Kedusha Achas, as is referred to in the Halacha. So that, how is it that you are being nakil with regard to Likhol Asayin on the second day of even Rosh Hashanah? Omar Lei, so Amemar answers, Ano kinahardoi svirali, the Amri af bebeitza. I hold like the lenient opinion of Nahardoi that says that even with regard to the egg laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is mutter on the second day. Demai daitach, what might be your thinking to be restrictive? Dilma ma'abri lei le'elul, that they might have extended Elul by an extra day. And if that would have happened, so then the second day of Rosh Hashanah is the real holiday. Elul is the month just before Tishrei, which ushers it on, during which, on Tishrei, the beginning of Tishrei, we usher in the new year by celebrating Rosh Hashanah. Now, if the month of Elul, which is essentially a 29-day month, is extended by 1 day, so then Rosh Hashanah will have been observed on the first day, which was day 30 of Elul, thinking that it was day 1, but if they extended Elul by a day, so that Rosh Hashanah's true observance would be on the second day. So is it because of that we'll say, consideration that you're saying that the egg and all other things should be usher on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. From the time of Ezra onwards, we never found Elul to be extended by a day, and hence the need for observing a second day of Rosh Hashanah was never really needed in the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. Hence, the second day of Rosh Hashanah is not a time for really being restrictive when it really wasn't ever necessary per se. V'ein oifen pitin gritzen ela rikikin. Tonu rabbonon beishamai omrim ein oifen pas ovo bepesach ubeisilu matirin. The Mishnah had mentioned ein oifen pitin gritzen. One is not to make pitin gritzen on yontov, only which we explained on the Mishnah, it's being thick loaves, only thin ones. This Tanaic source deals with Pesach, and it says that on Pesach you don't bake pas ova ubeis hillel matirin. Now the thinking right now, the initial thinking, is that you can't pas ova means some type of thick loaf, and the problem would be keeping it from turning into chometz. Beis Hillel, though, is lenient. The kamo pasova, well, how much is a thick bread that Beis Hillel is matir? Omar Rav Huna, tefach. Now, we have a diamond marking, which is explained on the side under the Nosei Mivne heading. The diamonds represent Shnei Hezberim, Mahu Pas shecholku alav beis shamai ubeis hillel. What is the bread? What is it concern? What is the bread concerning which beis hillel and beis shamai argue? They argue in mutter lachino, if it's mutter to prepare it. So the Gemara under Rav Huna's name said, and explain what is meant by Pasova, that Beis Hillel allows. It's a bread that is a tefach thick, a hand breadth thick. And that is allowed to be prepared on Pesach. Shekein motzinu belechem aponim tefach. We find by the preparation of the lechem aponim, which was the loaves that sat in the heichal of the Beis HaMikdash from week to week. They were baked on Friday, and they were be distributed amongst the Kohanim a week later on Shabbos. Now, the Lechem Aponim had to be matzah. Matzah means the bread that was not left to rise and ferment. Now, that Lechem Aponim was in fact had a status of matzah. That means it wasn't left to rise and ferment. And it was a tefach thick. So, based on that, Beis Hillel feels that Passover, thick bread, a tefach thick, is allowed to be prepared on Pesach. So, as far as Rav Huna is concerned, the basis of Beis Hillel's leniency is the lechem upon him of the Beis HaMikdash. Maskif Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef raises quite a few objections. And on the side, you can see how the double underlined series marking is explained. Im Omru is the phrase that's highlighted. Yesh lechalek bein hachonas lechem aponim beis hamikdash. Shenishma minchimutz. There's reason for making a distinction between the lechem aponim that was prepared in the beis hamikdash that was kept from fermentation. As opposed to preparing a thick loaf in everyone's individual homes. So the Gemara lists off reasons for making a distinction, and hence it would be unlikely to try to justify preparing thick loaves in one's house based on what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. And here the Gemara explains. Rav Yosef asks, Imamru bizrizen yomru b'sheinon's reason, if there is a heter for such a thick loaf and being considered still matzah, that was said by zrizen, by very diligent individuals. Those were the kohanim who worked in the Beis HaMikdash. Well, Rashi says there was actually the family known as Beis Gormo. They were artisans, they were craftsmen, and very, very careful and diligent. So that's true with regard to Lechem Aponim that was under their charge. Yomru B'Sheinon's reason, should you say the same thing by commoners in everyone's home where there isn't this level of diligence? And with the lack of diligence, so the likelihood of it being left to ferment is very great. If you're going to say that the lechem upon him was kept from being chometz, well, it was kneaded very extensively, as the Gemara in Menachos describes. And so that's true by pas amela. Could you say the same thing by our bread that's not as thoroughly kneaded? If it was said by the lechem upon him that it could be prepared a tefach thick, there the fuel firing up the ovens was made of very dry wood, and that wouldn't allow for fermentation. Should you say the same thing? Yomer beitzim lachem. Can you say the same thing by fresh wood? It's not as dry, and until the heat level builds up sufficiently to bake the loaves, the dough will ferment. If it was said by the lechem upon him, which were baked in a hot oven, and Rashi says shemasikin asibachol yoim, it was an oven that was in constant use, so the heat level was greater there. Can you say the same thing by our personal ovens that aren't? Don't resemble that. Imomru b'tanur shel mateches, yomru b'tanur shel cheres. If they said that the lechem upon him can be a tefach thick, that's because they were baked in metal ovens, which the heat level is much greater than the tanur that everyone has in their homes that's made of cheres, that's a clay oven. Omar Rav. So at this point, the explanation of pas ova as being tefach thick loaves, being allowed to be baked on Pesach and not fear chometz, and basing that on the lechem haponim, that we see is rather difficult. So the Gemara presents a second approach. Omar Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba, Shelis is Rebbe b'Yichud, Ulmonu Rav. I asked my teacher. B'yichud, there are two explanations. Either means we were in private, I was alone with him, or another explanation, I asked him with clarity. And Umar says, Umonu, and who is Rabbi? When Rabbi Rabba says, I ask my teacher, who is that? Rav. You'll see how the diamond is used to highlight the Rav's name, and this is contrasted with another name, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who is in the second version of the Gemara that's found in the brackets. But he says, I asked, what is Passover? My Passover, Pas Meruba. It means something that is a lot. We must correct a mistake we just made concerning the markings. The diamond was used to highlight the two hesberim of the what is the pass over which Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued. Rav Huna presented the first approach was the thick bread. We found a weakness in that explanation, so we are now saying pas ova is pas meruba, means a lot, to bake a lot of loaves, and the issue has nothing to do with chometz, but rather it has to do with tircha, extra exertion, extra effort expenditure, which we avoid on Yom Tov. So if we skip the brackets momentarily, the if you're telling me that pas ovo is means a lot, I might correlate pas ovo. The word ovo means thick. Why, if you're saying it represents quantity, large quantity, why then is the term ovo used? Answer: mishum de nefisha belisha, because there is a lot of dough in the kneading process. So it seems to me that it's like it's saying that it's a very thick batter of dough because it's thickness resulting from the large quantity. We skipped in the brackets. There's just a different version of names. Ika diamri on the second wide line in the brackets. Omar Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. Omar Rav. Here instead of Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba asking Rav, Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba is quoting Rav, where Rav says, "Sheilus is Rebbe Biyuchud. I asked my teacher when we were alone, Umanu, and who is Rav's teacher, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. We also know him as Rav Yehuda HaNasi, the editor of the Mishnayos. My pas ova, pas meruba. What does pas ova of the Mishnah mean? It means a lot of bread. V'amai korule pas ova, why is this term used? Answer, mishum de nefisha belisha, because there is a lot, it is large, or a large amount in the kneading process. A large dough was added, and from that many loaves would be baked. Inami, another explanation is, the Asre, the high Tano, in the town, in the locale of the Tana of our Mishnah, where he lived, pas meruba pas ova korule. Large quantity, a large amount of bread, was called pas ova. The Gemara asks, michti, mishum de kotach tircha de lo tzarechu. The objection, then, according to this approach, is not a chometz objection, but rather it's because of expenditure of effort that's not necessary. My iria pesach, then why does the original source, you can use the arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you align it with the arrow above, why speak then in the source about pesach? The issue of extra effort, tircha yaseira, is relevant to all holidays. Afilu b'shar yomim toivim nami. It would be an objection with regard to other holidays as well. The Gemara says, in hochinami, you are correct. The Tana b'yomt of the Pesach koi, the Tana, when he spoke above about b'shamay and oifin pasovah, the Pesach, the Tana was saying this halacha in the context of Yom Tov, and he happened to be speaking on the Yom Tov of Pesach. But not suggesting that it's a restriction that's specific to Pesach. Tanya Nami. How can we have a Tanaic source that supports this? Namely that the halacha is a Yom Tov, a general Yom Tov halacha, not Pesach Chometz specific. The source says, Beishamay Omrim Ein Oifen Pas Meruba. B'yom tov, ubeis hilo matin, we dash on the b'yom tov. There's another girsa, by the way, another version that says, ein ofen pas ova b'yom tov, like the loshon before, and beis hilo allows. And once again, the restriction on the part of Beis Shammai is based on extra expenditure of effort. Rashi says, he adds, which it's very important, he adds, the tarch tircha yaser lemocher leyom och achir. The baking of a large amount of bread is obviously you're baking for an amount that's not necessary for Yom Tov proper, but it would be used on the next day and the day after. The Mishnah. Af hu omar shloshet von lahokya. We pointed out in our previous year that this Mishnah is a continuation of the previous Mishnah, where we saw Rabbi Leo had practiced three halachas according to the restrictions of Beis Shammai. In this Mishnah, Rabbi Leo practices three leniencies contrary to the Rabbonin, who are restrictive. So the Mishnah is, what are the three leniencies? One, Mechavdin Beis Hamitos, has to do with sweeping the area between the beds. People ate in a reclining fashion, and after eating, so there would be an accumulation of crumbs. So he allowed the sweeping
on Yom Tov of the area where they ate. U'manichin es hamugmor b'Yom Tov. This is the second halacha. Mugmor has to do with the burning of the Lavona spice on coals. Gemara will explain this in much greater detail. And number three, v'oisin gedim akulus b'leilei psochim. When it came to Pesach night, so he allowed the preparation of goat meat in the gedi makulas fashion. And Rashi explains they would eat meat on Seder night, and how would it be prepared? So Rashi says krov uvnei me'ov tluim chutza lo betzido. The legs of the animal and the innards of the animal would be suspended outside the animal. Kishitzaleh, when they would roast it over a fire. So they would roast the animal with its innards removed and placed to its side with its legs. The hoyu oisin zecher lemikdash. The preparation of their meat for the Seder night in this fashion was as a reminder, in commemoration of what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. Shekosuvo, regarding the Korban Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash, it says Al Krov the Al Kirboi, was done with its legs and its innards next to it. And Rashi goes on to explain a little etymology concerning the word makulas. But for our purposes, we go back to the Gemara, when the end of the Mishnah, the Chachamim Oisrin, the Chachamim were restrictive. They prohibited these three things. Now, we have, as the Gemara opens up, we have a marking and also a topic heading. So the topic heading, the nosei, mugmar, this idea of burning the spice of the lavona, lahariach, for enjoying the smell, and ligamer. Ligamer is to have the scent produced by the burning spice enter, be absorbed into clothing. We'll also see a process of ligamer peros later in the Gemara, where you want the scent to enter the fruits that you will eat. The bow tie shape that you see is explained under the Mivneh. So Shnei Shlovim Bahavonas Rav Asi is two stages in understanding Rav Asi. So you can see that one is here, and four lines from the bottom, the Gemara says Elo Iyat Marhochi Emor, which we squiggle underline. We often squiggle underline transition phrases. So here there's a transition from the first version to the second version, and there you see the second version of Rav Asi. So Omar Rav Asi, Machlokes Legamer. The Machlokes we see in the Mishnah has to do with Legamer, which is, as we said before, that's the idea of the scent from the burning Lavona enters clothing. You want to, we would call maybe today a clothing freshener. This would be accomplished through the burning of the Lavona over coals, with the clothing suspended over that, absorbing the smoke and its fine smell. So it's concerning that you have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. However, simply placing the Lavona on coals to create a pleasant aroma, that Rav Asi at this point tells us, divrei hakol mutar, everyone agrees that would be allowed. Meisvei, an objection is raised. At the opening of this source, you see a bracketed section, and the reason for the brackets is that the main question comes from the point made after the brackets. And when we get to the main point, then we'll have to pause and explain this more thoroughly. So, that having been said, Rav Asi says his din, that lahariach, everyone agrees, is mutter. From the Tanaic source that presented, actually at the end of the Tanaic source, the question will arise. So in the meantime, the source begins with the issue of the sweeping. And we, by the way, have triangles here, and they highlight the two halachas that are dealt with. The issue is of mechavdin, and the next halacha is the issue of the mugmar, the levona spice placed over coals. So the first part, the source begins. Again, we emphasize the question that is raised is not coming from the first seven lines of the source. Ein mechavdin beis hamitos b'yom tov. One is not to sweep the area around where people ate. The shel beis Rav Gamliel mechavdin, and in the home of Rav Gamliel, they did sweep. Amar Belozer Rav Sodok. The Belozer Rav Sodok says, "Pomim harbe nifnasti achar abo lebeis Rav Gamliel. I on many occasions followed my father." So if it's Rav Belozer Rav Sodok speaking, I followed Rav Sodok in lebeis Rav Gamliel to the home of Rav Gamliel. They weren't sweeping the area between the beds, between there where they ate on Yom Tov. What they did was before Yom Tov, they swept up their house, and then they placed over the floor, they placed sheets. And Lomachar, Kishorchim Nichnasim, and the next day, when after the family finished eating and guests would arrive, Misalkinus Sazdinim, they would remove the sheets that had been covering the floor and catching all their crumbs. They would remove the sheets, Vinimsa Habayas Miskabne Lovin, and voila, the house was automatically swept. You understand, it's a figure of speech. The picking up of the sheets simply enabled the floor underneath to appear clean. Omru lo. So they said to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek, Im kain, if that's what really happened, then af b'shabbos mutar lasas kain, then it would be mutar to do that even on a Shabbos. The Gemara continues, V'ein manichin es hamugmar b'yom tov. We have the Tanakhama saying you're not allowed to place the mugmar down, the burning of the Lavona spice over coals, and Beis Ramil says it's okay. Amar Rav Elazar ben Tzedek. And the same structure appears here as we saw in the bracketed section. Pe'omim harbe nechnasi achar abo lebeis Ramil. Many times I followed father into Ramil's house. V'lohayim manichas ha-mugmar b'yom tov. They didn't burn the Lavona spice on Yom Tov. Ella, what they did over there was Mavian Ardiskos Shel Barzel. Ardiskos is a type of vessel that you were able to burn the spice inside the vessel on the day before and seal the vessel. And the next day, as the Gemara goes on, let's see what the Gemara says. U'ma'ashin oison me'er of Yom Tov. Upoking the Kvayim, Mayor of Yom Tov, they would burn the Lavona in these Ardiskois on the day before Yom Tov, and they would seal the holes in this Ardiskois vessel, Erev Yom Tov, so as the smoke was accumulated, it remained in the vessel. The next day, when guests would come, Poisonous Kvayim, they would unplug the holes of the Ardiskois. Vinim Sabayas Misgamer Me'elovin. The house was filled on its own with the pleasant aroma. Omru lo, they said to Rav Elazar ben Tzedek, Im kain, if that's what really happened, then there would be. No one would argue about that. Af b'Shabbos mutar lasos kain. Even on Shabbos would be mutar to do that. Let's take a look at the Rashi, in a little less than halfway down the wide lines under the Gemara. Im kain, Lo hayu chaver of chalukin alov. If your story is correct about the house of Ramliel, then his colleagues wouldn't have argued. Daf b'Shabbos mutar lasas kain. Setting up this vessel with the smoke, with the aroma in it from before Shabbos, certainly before Yom Tov, is allowed, and there would have been no argument over it. But we know there was an argument concerning the mugmar. It was based on Leal, definitely was burning the Lavona on Yom Tov proper, and that's why his colleagues argue. Mikol Makom, Yomrino Amino. We see from this Tanaic source, the Lav Legamer Hava. The whole issue of the Mugmor was not Legamer. Legamer was the idea of having the smoke be absorbed into clothing. That's not what was happening. Eloriach Lechvoi Ha'orchin. It was for creating an aroma in honor of the guests. And the Rabbanan forbid burning the incense on Yom Tov. And according to Rav Loza B'Sadok, even Rav Gamliel would not have allowed that. So according to the Tanakama, it was only the Rabbanan that wouldn't allow that, but Rav Gamliel would have allowed the placing of the coals, the incense on the coals on Yom Tov. And according to Rav Sadok, who set up the story with the Ardis Gois, even Rav Gamliel would not have allowed placing the Levona on the coals. The Ad Amris, you're saying Divri HaKol Mutter. If you look back with regard to the first version of Rav Asi, he said Lahariach Divri HaKol Mutter. You can see from this story that Lehariach, which was the issue over there, that's what the Ardis Gois was accomplishing, that was something that's not to set up the let's say not the Ardis Gois, but setting up the Levona for the purpose of creating a fine scent, you can see in this source is actually controversial, not like you Rav Asi said that everyone would agree. Elo, the Gemara continues, Yitmar Hochi Yitmar Om Rav Asi. If Rav Asi said anything, he must have said as follows. Machloikes lehoriach. The controversy arises concerning putting the Levona spice on coals to create a pleasant aroma. So regarding that, there is a machlokes. And according to our Mishnah, then Rabbi Gamliel would allow that, and the Chachamim would not allow that. Aval legamer osur, but to have clothing get absorbed with a pleasant smell, that everyone would agree, even Rav Gamliel would say, is forbidden on Yom Tov. Ibayahu, question, Mahu La'ashen. La'ashen has to do with having fruits absorb the pleasant fragrance of the burning Levona. So is it mutter to put Levona spice on coals to create smoke that would be absorbed in fruits? Now this is, we'll say, more food related. So we can understand that legamer, the clothing, that would be prohibited. But what about this? What about with the fruits? Rav Yirmiya bar Abba Omar Rav Osir. In the brackets, you see another opinion. Shmuel says it's mutter, but what following the brackets, Rav Huna explains Rav. That's why we had Shmuel Amar Mutter in brackets, so that you would be able to read Rav Osir, and you would continue Rav Huna Omar Osir Mishum Mechave. That Rav Huna is coming to explain Rav. That's why it's helpful to read Rav Osir and then read right into Rav Huna, who's explaining Rav. What's the problem? The problem is that when you put the Levona on the coals, it initially puts out, it quells the fire a bit, and then it gets fired up again. But the initial placing of the Levona on the coals extinguishes. Omar Lei Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, V'neim Amor Mipnei Shem Avir. Why do you say that the problem is Mechabe, when in fact the coals do burn the... They burn, the mavir is to burn, they burn the spices. Omar Lei, so Rav Huna says, Tchilasa mechabe v'soife mavir. As we explained, initially there is a quelling of the fire, and then it starts to burn again. So when I said mechabe, I'm not denying that there is a havora problem, but at the first stage, there is an element of extinguishing that takes place. You can see we have a new marking on the side under the Mivneh heading. The
house shape represents three shitos, mosai mutur, mosai osur la'ashen, agabi cheres, agabi gacheles. Well, we're going to continue this discussion of spices and they're being burnt. When is it mutter? When is it osur? So Amar Rav Yehuda, al gabi gacheles osur. The problem of placing spices on that which is burning is if you're placing on a burning coal. When you place on a burning coal, so then you experience mechabe and mavir. Continuing at the top of Chof Gimel Amar Aleph. Al gabi cheres mutter. However, if you place the coals on some clay that's burning hot, that's mutter, because that does not involve mechaba or mavir. Which would be more accurate, there's nothing being extinguished, and the spices that get burnt here, it's burned through what Rashi says a shinui, something that's unusual. Therefore, there's no isur doraisa to speak of. The Rabba Omar al gabi cheres nami osir mishum duka moilid recha. Rabba is restrictive, and he says even on the clay, the burning hot clay, one is to forbid it because you are creating a fragrance that enters the clay itself. Rashi explains on the second line from the top, the komolid recha shenichnas becheres, a new fragrance enters the clay, shelo hoya bo reach, originally it didn't have this scent to it. The osur midu rabbanon is a rabbinic prohibition. The shamuilu davar chadosh korov hu loisim alocha chadosh. When you create something new, it resembles an act of malocha, of creative activity. You can see we have a bracketed section, and if we skip the brackets momentarily. Rava Omar al gabi gacheles nami mutter. You can see that Rava is more lenient than anyone we saw before. He says placing the lavona, the spice, on a coal is allowed. And this leniency, by the way, Rashi adds, is similar to the leniency of Shmuel. We saw Shmuel before in brackets. So he says that placing it on gacheles is actually mutter. Now we should look at the Rashi. So we look at this together. Rav Amar al gabi gacheles nami mutter kishmuel the oichel nefeshu ishun peros. This having the fragrance enter the fruit is allowed, even by having the spice put on coals, because it's in the realm of food preparation. And it's considered shavu l'chol nefesh, is something that everyone can enjoy. V'imishum kibui v'avora v'olodi recha, and if you're going to raise those considerations as an objection, midi dehave abisra gomri deika kol hani v'shori. As the Gemara itself goes on to say, you know why all of those things don't bother me, the kibui and the havora and the modli reach? Because this is what happens when you are roasting meat on coals. That's midi dehavi abisra gomri. When you place bisra's meat on gomri, on coals, which is certainly allowed on Yom Tov. So just like that's allowed, and all of those other considerations of kibui and havora and moyli recha don't bother us. They don't stop us from allowing you to roast meat on coals, even though the coals now absorb the meat fragrance. Nevertheless, it's allowed. So too, the Ishun Peros is allowed. Now we have a bracketed section, so we go back over that. Rabo Rav Yosef, the Amri Travayhu. They both say, Schufe Kosa Ashiroi B'yomotovo Osir. Rashi on the third, on the fourth line from the top, Schufi kosa shiroi lichbois kais mevusam. If you have a cup that's filled with
fragrance, to then invert that cup al hashiram on silks, shel malbush, silk clothing, lahachnis bem reach aboisim shebakos, to have the clothing now absorb this fragrance. Also, the kamolid reach b'shem. This prohibition here is one of creating a new smell in the clothing. We continue in the Gemara. So the Gemara itself asks, "My taima?" We read this already in the Rashi, but the Gemara asks, "Why is schufi kosa shiroi?" Schufi is the inverting of this cup filled with fragrance on the silks is aser. So the Gemara says, "Mishum de kamoilid recha," because of this problem of creating a new scent. And we should point out this double underline we're using just to highlight the connection between what was said before of molid reach. In above we spoke about the molid reach in the into the clay, the hot clay, and here we're making reference to molid reach in the silks. The Gemara continues, umay shno, what is different here that we're prohibitive as opposed to the following case, mi molilo mriachbo v'kotmo mriachbo. This has to do with a fragrant branch. You can have you find this by the myrtle branch. It's fragrant. If you, it says in the source, mulalo is to rub it, and after rubbing the branch, the scent comes out. Kotmo is to split the branch, and where the branch is split, so there's usually a fresh interior, and that produces a nice. You can pick up a nice scent over there, and that's allowed. So why is that allowed where you're creating a nice scent, and schufi kosa shiroi is not allowed where that too you're creating a nice scent in the clothing? The Gemara answers, there's a fundamental difference. Hasam recha miha isa. In the case of the branch of this Tanaic source, molo mriachbo, the scent is there in the branch to begin with. Ve'osofei hu dekamoisif recha, by rubbing it or by splitting it, so you're simply increasing the accessibility, if you will, to that fragrance which was already there. So you don't have any issue of moilid recha. Hacha, though, in the case of schufi kosa shiroi, there is a, when we focus on the clothing, you're creating a new smell with regard to the clothing. That's olodi hu de kamoilid recha. You are making it anew. And that's why we said it is forbidden, because moilid, something, is reminiscent of a molacha. So as we look over this last section of Gemara, the Gemara had dealt with being ma'ashen peros, and we saw Rav's approach, as explained by Rav Huna. The problem there was a mechabe mavir problem. Rav Yehuda explained that the Rav Yehuda had made a distinction between gacheles and cheres. Rabbah went further in the direction of stringency, and Rava went in the opposite direction of leniency. So that we can say that Rav Yehuda represented a middle approach. Rabbah, extreme stringency, and Rava, extreme leniency. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.